protect businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois.
WILL's annual vintage vinyl sale for the Illinois Radio Reader is coming up on May 17th. That means it's time to donate your used records, CDs, DVDs, and working stereo equipment. Call Dean Geiken at 217-333-6503 for more information.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. There are millions of people in the United States who suffer from debilitating pain or from chronic fatigue that has gone undiagnosed. And in some of these cases, there may be people suffering from conditions like chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia or multiple chemical sensitivity. And because the symptoms are undetectable or difficult to detect, their doctors may either have misdiagnosed them or, in some cases, perhaps worse, said that there's nothing wrong or whatever you're experiencing is all in your head. Well, this morning in this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking with a physician who has now for a number of years been doing research on these conditions, sometimes called invisible illness, just because they are difficult to pin down and diagnose. Our guest is Benjamin Nadel. He's professor of neurosciences at New Jersey Medical School. In fact, he's headed a program of federally funded research that's been going on now for a number of years, trying to understand the reasons for severe and long-lasting fatigue and pain. He also maintains private practice and has done a lot of interviews on programs like Fresh Air and Larry King Live, just to mention two. He is the author of a book that explores this territory. So if you're interested in more information, you can look for his book. The title is Your Symptoms Are Real, What to Do When Your Doctor Says Nothing Is Wrong, and it's published by Wiley. And I'm sure that you can find it in the bookstore. And I'm sure also that if you have questions, that our guest will do his best to give you an answer. The number here on here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one is good anywhere that you can hear us. So if it would be a long-distance call, use that number, and the call's on us. And that is 800-222-9455. Again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Dr. Nadelson, hello.
Hi, David.
Well, thanks very much for giving us some of your time today. We certainly appreciate it.
And I appreciate being able to talk about this problem in my book, which really is underappreciated.
How many people are we talking about that could indeed be suffering from the kind of conditions that, and I mentioned a couple of them, maybe also irritable bowel syndrome is another that fall in this large category of conditions that can be very painful and very troubling and yet difficult to diagnose?
Well, people that actually receive the diagnosis, say, of irritable bowel, it's about 12% of the population. About 4% of the population receives the diagnosis of fibromyalgia. And because doctors exclude any cause of fatigue, the rates of chronic fatigue syndrome are really pretty small, about a half a percent. But that's really the tip of the iceberg. There are appreciable numbers of individuals whom I call pre-patients. That is, they've got pain, they've got fatigue, but they don't attain the criteria. They're not on the horrible end of the illness spectrum. So I would say that probably 15% of people have problems with pain and fatigue, and probably up to 20% have intermittent problems with their digestion and discomfort in their abdomens. Hmm. Common.
Yeah, it's it really strikes me, and I certainly don't mean this to be a criticism of the medical profession, but it is notable, I think, just in how many cases you have an individual who is troubled enough so that he or she goes to see a doctor, and they talk about what's going on, and that ultimately what happens is the doctor says, I can't find any reason for the symptoms that you're reporting.
Right. Well, that's right. And by definition, these syndromes, that is, collections of symptoms, are unexplained, because if we had a cause for them, then we'd give them a different name. You know, we do that, and that's what the hope of medical research is, to be splitters, to take all people that have widespread pain and tenderness, that's the way we identify fibromyalgia, and split them up based on trying to find biomedical markers or specifics about their illness, to try to find some that have a cause that then we can design therapeutic trials around. So basically, though, what's helped the medical profession, if you will, become believers are the development of drugs that relieve these conditions. So there really are, David, two ways that we can advance medical knowledge. I'm a physiologist. I take patients with severe fatigue and pain, and I bring them in the laboratory, and I do experiments to try to understand why they have this condition. I collect blood. I measure various biological markers. That's method one. Method two is to say, I think that some of these people have a problem with such and such, and I've got a drug that improves such and such. And if that drug works, then that proves that particular underlying mechanism. And there have been drugs released that work on the nervous system in the gut to relieve irritable bowel syndrome. Those drugs actually have run into problems with severe side effects, so they really have been sidelined by FDA, but they did work. And there's now a new FDA-approved drug, which I think is the beginning of many that we'll see in the next 18 months, that improves fibromyalgia. So we are moving ahead in terms of finding drugs that affect the underlying biological processes causing these problems.
Well, that seems to, I guess my initial reaction to something like that is to think that that's a rather backward way of doing diagnosis. But I suppose if that's, if the idea is that you have a patient with symptoms that are making their life difficult and you can do something about it, then you should. That's what you as a physician want to do. And I suppose if that helps you make your diagnosis, then maybe that's okay.
But let me actually back you up. I think we didn't communicate as well as we could have. What I'm saying is that that's a research tool to understand what the underlying biology is. But these illnesses can be diagnosed. The doctors actually don't have a problem diagnosing them if they understand the criteria. The problem is that when someone goes into a doctor's office and say, I am exhausted, and my exhaustion is so great that I'm just much less active than I used to be, the doctor's eyes glaze over because a million things, a million pathological processes can produce fatigue. There's nothing specific about it. And then the other problem is that doctors are trained to go to the laboratory to look for answers. And when they do lab tests on these people and the tests come back normal, their training doesn't prepare them for the next step. And there has to be a next step. If someone is suffering, it's not appropriate for anyone to say, well, there's nothing wrong. I mean, it's appropriate to say, well, we haven't found any laboratory abnormality, but of course there's still something wrong. So basically, the researchers, people like myself, have to keep working on trying to fill in, remove the question marks, if you will, so that what's unexplained becomes explained. But in the meantime, we do have symptomatic patients in whom doctors make the diagnosis of chronic fatigue syndrome, irritable bowel, fibromyalgia, and there are ways to try to help them cope with the illness. And one of the ways is then these drugs.
Hmm. We have as our guest in this hour of Focus 580 Dr. Benjamin Nadelson. He's professor of neurosciences at New Jersey Medical School and has been involved for a number of years now looking into why it is some people have severe and long-lasting fatigue and pain. Also looking at the concern that sometimes people are not diagnosed, they're misdiagnosed, and are not getting the kind of help that they need. If you'd like to read more about this, you can look for his book, Your Symptoms Are Real, What to Do When Your Doctor Says Nothing Is Wrong. It's published by Wiley. And questions here are welcome to 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. In the book, you explain that when you have a patient who comes in and has unexplained pain or pain that's difficult to explain or they have fatigue, the first thing you do, you have a standard list of tests, blood tests, that you're going to do. Some, I guess you do on everybody who comes in, there's a standard list that you do. And then depending on the symptoms, there may be some other things that you do. Is this unusual, or would any doctor confronted with these kind of symptoms and having a difficult time explaining them go to, as the first thing, do this kind of list of tests?
Well, every doctor may have a slightly different list, but I mean, the thing, certainly for fatigue, we need to rule out an underactive thyroid, we need to rule out an anemia where your blood count is low. We need to rule out an underlying infection, which in the Northeast, one of the common ones is Lyme disease. That's not much of a problem, thank goodness. In the Midwest, not as much of a problem, at least. So there's a set, and then we have to make sure that there's no underlying liver disease. So we do standard tests to evaluate patients. And if patients have pain, then, of course, we worry about, do they have some underlying disease of their joints and ligaments? Because the patients, of course, complain that their muscles hurt. And when you palpate the muscles, patients with fibromyalgia at least, they don't want to be poked. It hurts. And so that led to the idea that maybe these were diseases of the joints and ligaments. And so patients sort of got sent off to the rheumatologist. That's the kind of doctor who takes care of those patients. And the problem with rheumatologists is, the problem with sending a patient like that to a rheumatologist is that research has shown that they indeed do not have a problem with their muscles, ligaments, and joints, that those really appear relatively healthy, but instead that fibromyalgia appears to be a disease, a brain disease, where normal regulation of pain systems is affected. So one of the problems here is the doctor just has to be tuned in that these syndromes exist, and of course be willing to help a patient even if he or she can't find the cause. And I should say, David, that in doctors practicing primary care medicine, sure, the ingrown toenail and fractured wrist and appendicitis are very common, but a large percentage of people come into the doctor's office with complaints that don't, really have any apparent cause, and the doctor has to deal with it. The problems with these ailments is that they're not short duration. They last for many months and even years.
Well, if you have someone who comes in and has this persistent fatigue and pain or both, and you do your tests and you eliminate the thyroid problems, they're not anemic, they don't have something like Lyme disease, it's not liver disease. If you eliminate those things, that would be your first possibility. I guess I wonder at how many cases you still end up with no answer, or at least you say, well, it's not any of these things.
Well, of course, my entire practice is that, and my research is that. So, I mean, basically, I almost don't have to do blood tests on a patient who comes into my office and says, well, Dr. Nadelson, I was a perfectly healthy attorney until July 9th, 2006, when I came down with a flu that just sort of knocked me on my ear. And with that flu, I had achiness, fatigue, difficulty concentrating, headache, swollen glands, you name it, and I've never gotten better. And I've seen 12 doctors before you. So when I hear that kind of story, or the other one is, I was well until sometime in 2007 when I noticed I was getting achy all over, and that achiness got worse over 6 or 8 months. And now it's so bad, I can hardly get out of bed. I hurt so much. And I've seen 12 doctors before you, Dr. Nadelson. So I of course, do those blood tests just to make sure that every I is dotted and T is crossed. But in individuals like those two women I've mentioned, and I will say women because women have these problems somewhat more than men, and they are more of a problem in women's health than men's health, but men get them also. I don't really need to do the blood test, but I do them just to be sure that I've ruled out everything.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, I guess, just from the little now that I've learned looking at your book, I suppose if me as a layperson, if you said to me, well, you know, I've got this patient and they come in and this is the way they present, as in the first case, I guess I would say, sounds like chronic fatigue to me. Is it really that difficult to, or are doctors simply not tuned in so that they would consider that as a possible diagnosis?
Well, I think they do. I think they indeed do. But I think that making a diagnosis and then coming up with a treatment plan, David, of course, are two issues. Mm-hmm. I think doctors are more attuned, although some of them, you know, when they do the blood tests and everything is negative, they may say, well, you know, you may have chronic fatigue syndrome, but there's nothing I can do for you, stiff upper lip, or, you know, maybe I'll refer you to a psychiatrist. Those, you know, the options the doctor picks, and of course, it depends who the doctor is. Yeah, so if the doctor is pressed for time, as more and more of our primary care providers are, or if it's not even a doctor, if it's a nurse practitioner, that individual may or may not be aware of these diagnoses. But even if the diagnosis is made, then what? Okay? Then what does the care giver do? Does the care giver say, well, I don't really know what to do about this. Take some Naproxen or take some Motrin. So the diagnosis is one thing, but in the book I lay out this path for wellness, a plan where an individual, either by him or herself, in association with the doctor, can move toward wellness.
Just a quick follow-up to touch again on something that you mentioned, the fact that most of the people who seem to be affected by these two conditions in particular that we're talking about, fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue, are women. Now, I guess also one of the things, though, we know about men is that they're perhaps less, even if they think something's going on, they're maybe less likely to call the doctor and go for medical treatment. They're a little more prone to shrug it off. But it seems that even with that, it still seems that these conditions affect women disproportionately. Is there some idea, some thought as to why that would be?
Well, you see, that's a really $64,000 question. That is gender skewing in disease. So, you know, let's look at lung cancer. Lung cancer was a disease of men. Now it's 50-50. After women started smoking in the 30s and 40s and 50s, now the rates are the same. But there are certainly diseases that tend to be more not gender specific, but skewed to a specific gender. And two of them that occur in women more than men are autoimmune diseases, the diagnoses of lupus, erythematosus, and rheumatoid arthritis, and multiple sclerosis. These are illnesses that occur more in women than in men. And then, of course, depression occurs more in women than in men. So, and the $64,000 question is, why do these diseases, why is there this skew related to whether your chromosome is XX or XY? And there are a lot of bright ideas, but there still aren't any definite answers.
All right, let's talk with the caller, and they're calling from Indiana on our toll-free line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Well, you may have answered my question. What I was after is what the research is showing, you know, the possibilities. You talked about something about the pain system, but you didn't carry it any further. And I was wondering just where you think this thing is going to end up, since we can't find it with regular laboratory tests. Is there something that has to be more specific? Are we talking nano stuff kind of thing, or is it a combination of stuff? I live with a woman that has fibromyalgia, and we went through many doctors who's, you know, he went from psychosomatic kind of stuff to, well, you know how women are, that kind of thing. Finally got one and understood what was going on, and it's been taken care of somewhat, but it's certainly a problem. You just sometimes just a tenderest touch can cause a very bad reaction, which, you know, befuddles me. And so I was interested if, you know, where the research is going.
Sure. Well, this caller, David, makes the point. He just laid out three or four physician responses to this. And, you know, so there's still physicians that say nothing's wrong, it's all in your head. I would urge you to pick up my book. Maybe your library can get it. But here's the way it works. First of all, we're talking about a syndrome. So let me just back up a minute to show you the way medicine advances. And what a syndrome is a collection of symptoms. And then if abnormalities can be shown, those are called signs. So, for instance, in the early to mid-80s, there were letters to medical journals about something called the gay plague, where homosexual individuals were found to be losing weight, and actually some of them got bumps on their skin that turned out to be a kind of cancer called Kaposi's sarcoma. And so that syndrome got a lot of attention, and of course you know the outcome of it. So how medicine advances is first people recognize that symptoms and maybe some signs, abnormal signs, hang together. And then they try to find biomedical tests. They try to, and so that's why I am a splitter instead of a lumper. Lumpers say, well, you know, fibromyalgic patients have fatigue, and chronic fatigue patients have achiness. Maybe they're all the same. They sort of lump them together. And I try to find my hooks into things that let me split. And by using a splitter's tool, you then can try to identify things that a subset have. So, for instance, in my patients with chronic fatigue, many, but not all of them, complain that they feel a lot worse when they stand. So we've started studying the biology of people when they go from lying to standing. And we find that younger people with chronic fatigue syndrome, their heart rate accelerates. Not all, but maybe about half of the younger people with chronic fatigue syndrome, their heart rate accelerates very much when they stand. And older people, we found that a quarter of them, their heart rate doesn't accelerate, but they start to hyperventilate or overbreathe when they stand. Now, both breathing and heart rate control are neurologically controlled by reflexes, and so my colleagues and I are just starting to research that subgroup of patients in the hopes that we'll find a mechanism that we can then design a treatment for. Now, for your particular question, fibromyalgia, my colleague Dane Cook, who's at the University of Wisconsin, is doing brain imaging. And with brain imaging, you, of course, have heard of MRI. MRI shows you anatomy. But functional MRI lets you see what part of the brain is activated when the person in the magnet is doing something or experiencing something. So Dane has shown that when you put people with FM in the magnet and you tell them that they may receive a painful, that they will receive a painful stimulus, their brain turns on when you just give them a warm stimulus. But if you, so they, their brain acts as if warm is very, very painful. But if you tell them that they're not going to receive any pain at all, their brain is the same as a normal person. So there's anticipation, which first of all turns on brain systems. And then even if you take out the anticipation part, their brain is greatly hyper-reacting to what would be not a terribly painful system stimulus. So that's a bit of evidence suggesting that there's altered brain function. And there are some biological ways to test that out. For instance, if you give someone a painful stimulus on their thumb, and then you give them, and then you check their pain thresholds in their other arm, in a normal person, the pain threshold goes up, so it's harder to elicit pain. But in someone who has fibromyalgia, their pain threshold actually goes down. They're even more sensitive. So all these ways of trying to get a handle on what's going on in the brain by doing testing in the periphery are leading us to toward the understanding that brain is involved in pain and fatigue, and now we have to continue to use the splitters technique to pull out individuals that are similar but different from other patients so we can come up with ideas for treatment.
We have some other callers. We'll get to them in just a moment. I'd like to take the opportunity to introduce again the guest for this hour of Focus, Benjamin Nadelson. He's a physician. He's professor of neurosciences at New Jersey Medical School, and he's headed an 18-year program of federally funded research into understanding the reasons for severe and long-lasting fatigue and pain. And if you'd like to read more on this subject, he's authored a book that you might find helpful. The title is Your Symptoms Are Real, What to Do When Your Doctor Says Nothing is Wrong. It's recently published by Wiley, so I'm sure you can find it in the bookstore or the library. And questions are welcome, and we have several. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Urbana, here where we are, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I was wondering if you have considered celiac disease as a factor in both IBS, chronic fatigue, and also fibromyalgia. I'm asking because, first of all, I think that I have celiac disease, and my doctor believes that I do too. Unfortunately, I didn't realize there were tests, and I went on the diet. And once I was on, I had great improvement in both the IBS, which has just gone. I'm no longer bothered with it. And also with the chronic fatigue, after I stopped working, I was sleeping for roughly 12 hours a day, deep sleeps, not little naps. And that also disappeared after I went on the diet. I also wonder if you're familiar with the book by Braley and Hogan called Dangerous Grains, in which they list these three diseases or syndromes as ones that are associated with celiac disease.
Well, so let me start with the celiac disease idea. When I have patients who have any bowel symptoms at all, I, of course, evaluate them for celiac disease. And I have done a study where I collected, now I don't remember how many blood samples we did. I think it was 40 patients and 40 controls. I think it was actually 50 patients and 50 controls, and sent them out for the test for celiac disease, which has gotten more and more specific. And we found two positives in the patients and one positive in the controls. So we do not believe that celiac disease is a major cause of chronic fatigue syndrome. The point from that little study is we found some abnormalities in people that were in good health. But we certainly know that celiac disease can be an illness mimicker. And I think if I took 100 patients who had celiac disease, many of them would have the same story as you of a lot of fatigue. That's looking at it from the other side. So from the CFS and FM side, not terribly common. From the irritable bowel side, more common than in healthy people.
Uh-huh. Well, of course, the current thinking is that it's only 1% of the population that has celiac disease, so it certainly wouldn't explain all cases. But I'm sure you also are aware that twice as many women as men have celiac, which
sure
ties in with a lot of other
That's because it's another example of an autoimmune disease. Uh-huh. That particular disease, the protein substances in wheat actually set off an allergic reaction in the gut, so that the gut is no longer able to absorb foodstuffs in the normal way that it does, and that produces a lot of GI symptoms and even vitamin deficiencies.
Right. And what about the book, Dangerous Grains?
Actually am not familiar with it, but I've taken a note to take a look at it. Thanks for mentioning it.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. So just would one of the things, when you have someone who comes in with chronic fatigue, would one of the things that you would consider and want to try to rule out, would it be celiac disease?
Well, again, I would. So when patients see me and they've had every other workup, but I usually look for some kind of bowel symptom. And if patients don't have any bowel symptoms, that's a test I usually don't do, especially in view of the fact that we don't find rates increased in chronic fatigue syndrome.
Okay.
But I do, whenever there's any bowel symptoms at all, then I check for that.
All right. Let's talk with another listener here in Champaign. This is line number two. Hello.
Yes, thank you. I'm curious to know if in your own research or just your, looking at the literature, how much attention has been given to looking at the fascia and trying to understand, problems with fibromyalgia? My impression of the study of anatomy generally until fairly recently is that the attitude is the fascia is something that you cut through to get what you're really interested in looking at. But I do know that some recent research into fascia has discovered that it has a lot of interesting properties, and certainly looking at it as a pathway for how acupuncture works and the signals are propagated, that they found some very interesting things. And it goes pretty much everywhere in the body, and certainly I would think it would be an area that you'd want to look at in terms of trying to understand what's going on and what possible solutions there could be to it.
Sure. Well, that's really a great question. The fascia is the sort of tissue that holds the muscle, if you will, together. And although I don't really know of anyone who's researching fascia per se, I do know that there are both physicians and alternative practitioners that do a form of deep fibromuscular release called Rolfing, which is thought to do things to fascial planes. Again, how the mechanism of Rolfing works is unclear. And we have some preliminary evidence that it's helpful in fibromyalgia pain. I believe that deep massage and gentle physical conditioning and stretching, of course, are critical to wellness. And this Rolfing treatment, the one thing we haven't done is done appropriate controlled studies, so I'm a little leery of it. But we do have some data showing individuals who claim to be feeling better have better postural testing after the Rolfing, course of Rolfing. So I think the idea of fascial issues is a good one. Now, whether Rolfing actually affects fascia peripherally or is an input to alter the brain, that's also a big question.
Well, certainly Rolfing is one way to affect the connective tissue. There are a lot of other physical methods to do that, some of them a lot less aggressive than Rolfing. But it's an area you might want to look at. I know in just looking at some of the literature at the Fascia Research Institute that they've seen that it seems to act in a fashion of propagating signals in a non-hierarchical way and seems to be organized something like a liquid crystal, and has, it generates signals that move through the body and proprietary information, and so, Mial, there may be more things going on in terms of signaling than, you know, the standard, look at the nervous system.
Well, I sure appreciate that that input. That's something that we really, in the field, have to take into consideration.
I have a couple of other callers here. Although before we go on, what I would like to give you the opportunity to do is to talk a little bit about what the kinds of advice that you can give to people who are living with some of the conditions that we've talked about, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, things that can be done, things that they can do, particularly in the way of lifestyle and perhaps also medication, things that really seem to be beneficial and make their lives just a little bit easier. What are some of the things that you recommend to patients?
Well, I mean, one of the things that bothers patients so much is that illness in general, and these illnesses in specific, really remove control from the patient, make the patient feel that he or she is out of control. And so putting control back into the hands of the patient is critical. It's empowering. Now, medicines are certainly helpful in terms of pain management. And they're less helpful in terms of fatigue, although there are some treatments that really will help individuals. But when someone gets sick, they get inactive. And inactivity carries its own additional illness burden. And so one of the things that I spend a good deal of time on in the book is a program of gentle physical conditioning. And by this, I don't mean going to the gym and working out. I mean starting to walk and to do some stretching. And for individuals who have painful feet so that they're not able to walk, consider swimming or other even upper arm exercises. And I talk about some of them. And then there's some breathing exercises from some of the yogic traditions that I go into that are also empowering and are designed to improve fatigue. And now, one of the problems, though, in having these illnesses is the concern that if you do too much, it's going to set you back. And that's a very common complaint. And so I really feel that people with any chronic illness, whether it's multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, whatever, really need a coach to help them move to wellness, someone that they can sort of bounce the questions off, well, gee, am I doing too much? Or what do you think I need to be doing here? And coaches are, coach can be someone in the family, and I sort of lay out some pointers in the book that I think you would really have to look at if you wanted to be a coach for a patient. But there are coaches who are healthcare professionals. Most of the coaches, most of these people come from the psychology tradition, where coaching, of course, is helpful dealing with problems like depression. But many pain management centers hire individuals who've been trained at this particular kind of therapy called cognitive behavioral, which helps individuals get more active and surmount any fears they may have about being more active. So each of these steps on the path to wellness empowers the patient and makes him or her feel like they're actually participating in their own care. And for this particular set of illnesses, that's critical. An individual can't go to the doctor and say, fix me. That doesn't work. The individual, the patient, him and herself, has to buy into wellness and to commit to it.
We have another caller here, two other callers, in fact, and the next is in Champaign. We will talk with them right here on our line number 3. Hello.
Yes. Good morning. I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia, and to tell you the truth, I heard that most of your lab works, or some of them, came back inconclusive, I got to thinking about mine, and I could always tell when there was an onset of my typical episode. I could tell that my SED rate was high just from the level of pain that I was starting to experience and how it progressed. Now, have you found any correlation between fibromyalgia and the SED rate being elevated?
Well, sure. I would say that 15% of patients with FM or chronic fatigue syndrome have abnormal tests on autoimmune, which would be like looking for lupus or rheumatoid arthritis, or signs of inflammation, which is a sedimentation rate, or another test called C-reactive protein is another test I do, which looks for inflammation. Yes, I find these things.
Okay.
And they suggest to me in that particular patient that he or she has an underlying, I'm going to say rheumatologic disease, but a rheumatologic disease that the rheumatologists are not prepared to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, when we do the anti-nuclear antigen, which is a one of the first steps in diagnosing rheumatoid or lupus, when I get a positive test of 1 to 320, the rheumatologists are not interested in this. They really don't really start paying attention until it's even higher, 1 to 640 or 1260. So we're dealing with a gray area here for a subset of people, and you may well be in that gray area.
Mm-hmm. I have been taking Celebrex. However, my family history does have cardiac problems, and so I am very leery of staying on it long term. What is your thought on that?
Well, I think you're right to be leery. I mean, the evidence does suggest that there's a risk factor for it. We really don't know if that risk factor extends to other non-steroidal anti-inflammatories like Motrin, ibuprofen, but we sort of suspect that it may be, but you could try to move off away from Celebrex to one of the less specific ones, like ibuprofen.
Mm-hmm.
And then, again, you can take a look in my book, because for many people, I have to tell you, with bad FM, the NSAIDs don't help,
mm-hmm.
don't help at all. So if they do help some, that again suggests that there's some kind of inflammatory process.
What about these new medications that you were talking about? Are they such that they would have less side effects, fewer side effects?
Well, I've got to tell you, aspirin is a drug that's been around for maybe 400 years, and it's got plenty of side effects, and we're using it more and more. So you really, as drugs get more sophisticated, some of them indeed do have less side effects. But I have to say that every drug has side effects.
Hmm.
Every drug has side effects. It may not be a risk of heart disease or gut discomfort, but it'll be some other side effect.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to balance these.
Yeah. And I just have a little comment for David. He had mentioned how men like to try to ignore their symptoms.
Yes.
But believe me, if they really had fibromyalgia, I don't think those symptoms can be ignored.
I think you're quite right.
Yeah.
You know, I have patients, let me talk to you about just a second about that if I can, with chronic fatigue syndrome is not diagnosed unless there is some disability already in terms of reduced activity, whereas fibromyalgia, you just have to have the pain and tenderness. So I have patients who say, well, you know, I say to them, well, how do you manage in the workplace? And they say, well, I just absolutely have to do it. And then I see the next patient who's obviously sicker and was not able to maintain her normal life in the workplace.
Right.
So, yes, I mean, men tend to be less healthcare seeking than women. But if you ratchet up the discomfort, everyone comes to the doctor. It's normal. That's what we're here for.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. You've been very helpful.
All right. Thanks for the call. We have about 7 minutes left, perhaps, in this part of Focus 580. Our guest is Dr. Benjamin Nadelson, and the spelling on his last name, Nadelson. He's professor of neurosciences at New Jersey Medical School and author of the book Your Symptoms Are Real, What to Do When Your Doctor Says Nothing Is Wrong. It's published by Wiley. And we have another caller here in Bloomington, Illinois. We will talk with them next on our line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Would you speak to post-herpetic neuralgia for someone? I've had it for 40 years almost, so three decades of being told mostly it was in my head, and then the other with some good treatments. But the other thing I'd like to let people know is that there is a chronic pain support group, and that helps a lot. There's one in Champaign-Urbana that meets the second Monday of every month at 6 p.m. at the Urbana Library. And I did for many years use your breathing techniques to try and control pain, which when doctors would refuse to treat something that they said was all in my head. So, okay.
Well, I actually, if there's one thing that's, well, it's not all in your head, but it's all in one of your neural ganglia, it's postherpetic neuralgia. That is a curse. That disease is a curse. So what it is shingles that an adult gets, which is chicken pox in an adult. It usually affects one or two nerves, so you get a rash sometimes on your chest and belly, horribly if you get it in your eye, but that's possible. And then most people who get shingles, it goes away. It's a little uncomfortable. And younger people, it really goes away nearly always, but older people sometimes are left with this horrible curse of horrible, horrible pain. And this pain can be treated with medicines, but I just had a relative, actually, who's had been disabled from this post-herpetic neuralgia, who's just had a morphine pump installed into her spinal space, and that helps, of course. So there are a series of treatments that pain managers do for this horrible pain. But the other reason I'm glad you asked the question is individuals who've never had shingles. There is now a vaccine out there, and if you want to improve your quality of life, don't worry about the money. Rush to get this shingles vaccine because it will prevent shingles from occurring, not in 100%, but in a good majority of individuals getting the vaccination. And, of course, if you don't get the shingles, you don't get the postherpetic neuralgia pain. So the vaccine is a brand-new development, big step forward.
It's a living hell, too. You're right. They shouldn't do that because it is a living hell. And the support group is a wonderful thing to have, too. Thanks.
Well, you may want to just take a look at the book for some of the treatment ideas I have. I'm sure if you've had the post-herpetic neuralgia as long as you've had, you probably have had these treatments, but check it out anyhow.
Yeah, just we're coming down to having a couple of minutes left. And I guess I think it's interesting we keep coming back to this idea that people are experiencing real pain, and yet they have had the experience with some physicians of being told, either I can't find out anything, or this is just, it's psychosomatic. And in fact, I'm thinking here about a month ago, there was a story in the New York Times, and I know you saw it because they later published a response from you. This was the story about the fact that the drug company Pfizer had gotten approval for Lyrica, which was the first medicine that was approved to treat fibromyalgia. And this article raises the issue, or at least it says that, well, yeah, some doctors think it's real and some doctors don't. And I know you wrote into the paper and said, look, I'm really unhappy about this article because there's no question in my mind that it's real, and we shouldn't be putting out this notion that, well, it might not be a real thing.
Well, you know, you should have seen the steam coming out of my ears when I read on the front page of the newspaper I read every morning a news article saying that because one or two illness deniers say fibromyalgia is not a disease, it's not a disease. You know, that's not the point. Is it's not important whether it's a disease or not, though, David. It really, that's not the point. Mm-hmm. The point is, are people suffering? In medicine, when I took the Hippocratic Oath, I didn't take it to treat one disease, two diseases, or three diseases. I took that oath to help people reduce suffering, feel better. And so, yes, I want to work in when I put my research hat on, to understand the underlying biology and multiple causes of these invisible illnesses. But when I put my doctor's hat on, I want to make that person feel better. Of course, that's why I wrote my book. And the other reason I wrote my book is because some doctors just don't have the time or interest or inclination or I don't know what. And so I think there's a need for it at this point.
I think, too, that you know, one of the, that in the section, a lot of the book is devoted to trying to make suggestions for people to for things that they can do in terms of treatment, things they can do that will help them feel better. And the I'm sure that you would say that you would like people to go to a conventional medicine doctor perhaps first, but that complementary approaches can also be useful. How, though, do you sort out what is where we actually have some reason to believe that a complementary approach will work from those things that where people might at worst might be hurting themselves or at best might simply be wasting their money?
Well, certainly those are the two issues. Something making you sick and something doing a moneyectomy, if you will, on you. And, you know, I mean, that really is a hard to answer in a few seconds, David. I've devoted a whole chapter of the book to that. You know, this deep therapeutic massage I mentioned earlier, it's pretty vigorous, but it really can't hurt you. It's just the number of sessions. The breathing exercises, acupuncture, there may be a role in widespread pain, certainly. Some of the claims that are made, and of course, if people make claims on the internet and there's testimonials, you just have to just be careful because, you know, there really are no data. And I do reveal in the book a couple of studies. I did my own study on one of these food supplements, nutraceuticals, where the manufacturers were convinced it was going to improve fatigue and pain, and under careful study it didn't. So I think the what people do is they go to the doctor, and if the doctor blows them off, then they're on their own, and they go alternative complementary. But the point is you must stick with your doctor. Now, if your doctor just won't listen, you've got to find another one. But you're paying for it. The public is paying, and the public and money talks. So find a doctor who will listen and work with you and try to help manage your pain. And you know, I wrote this book. The last book I wrote on fatigue, many primary care doctors read because I do in detail lay out my protocols for treatment. And so you can bring the book to your physician's attention in terms of the chapters on treatment.
We're going to have to leave it at that because we're here at the end of the time again. The book is Your Symptoms Are Real, What to Do When Your Doctor Says Nothing Is Wrong, by our guest, Dr. Benjamin Nadelson. He is professor of neurosciences at New Jersey Med School. Dr. Nadelson, thank you very much.
And David, thanks for having me.
This show, Focus 580, made possible in part by a grant from Bodywork Associates, offering professional licensed massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. Bodywork Associates offers four area locations, including on the lower level of the Illini Union at the Oasis. We will break, as we usually do at this point, to bring you an update on the markets and news. Then we'll be back, so please stay tuned.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from the Archer Daniels Midland Company, ADM, resourceful by nature.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the commodity markets, where at midday in the soybean pit, the market has turned higher following strength in the Minneapolis March spring wheat contract. Earlier today, we saw that the Minneapolis March contract go 90 up, which is limit up for the current agreed upon price, the current trading range, based on the recent announcements out of the CBOT earlier this week. Let's go ahead and look at the current trade, and we'll begin in the soybean pit, where March is now running at 1322 up one, May 1340 up 1.5, July 1349.5 up a quarter, November at 1270 is down one. March soybean meal